Welcome to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I am Laura Dierda, an editor with Becker's Healthcare, and I am pleased to be joined by John Corris, President and CEO of Tampa General Hospital. We will discuss several key leadership issues, including his response to the coronavirus pandemic. John, real quick before we jump into the questions here, could you please introduce yourself?
Sure. John Corris, and as you said, I'm the President and CEO of Tampa General Hospital. It's one of the largest freestanding institutions in the state of Florida. We're a level one trauma center. We are an academic and research organization. Our partner is the University of South Florida for the medical school, as well as a big chunk of our physicians. We have also a robust relationship with our private practice docs, but we are what's considered to be a safety net hospital or a critical hospital in the state, given our size and the fact that we're tertiary, quaternary, we're level one trauma center on the west. We're the only level one trauma center on the west coast of Florida, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time with us today. My first question here is, how have you been able to mobilize your team and rapidly change priorities in response to the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, probably like most institutions around the country, we trained for emergencies, we trained for disasters, we trained for things that happen that come up during the course of a year or over years. Now, clearly, this pandemic we're in unprecedented times, but the fundamentals of preparing for an emergency, mobilizing around an emergency, we are very well trained on. And so what happened was, is when we were keeping an eye on what was happening with the pandemic, we realized probably a week or two before the American healthcare system was mobilizing that we needed to stand up our emergency operations center and start planning for and resourcing for the response to COVID-19. And so we immediately started to organize around that. The very first thing that we did is we assembled our emergency operations group, which is led by our chief operating officer, Kelly Cullen. And she mobilized and is responsible for the tactical response of COVID-19. And really that is really focused on preparing for the surge, preparing for patients that are coming into our institution. And so we just got to jump on it by a couple of weeks.
That's great to hear. And I know very important, as you know, this is definitely a situation between life and death for some patients. So very important. What were some of the one or two most difficult decisions you've had to make as your team responds to the pandemic?
Well, it's a good question. I'm not sure they're like difficult decisions, but just kind of shifting priorities. First and foremost, the safety and health and wellness of our team members come first. So we're an institution that really believes that our team members are literally our number one priority. Because if you take care of your team and you create an environment that keeps them safe, they can do their best work. So the very first thing that we had to do is almost immediately stop or slow down, in a lot of cases, a lot of our strategic work and a lot of our program development work. And we had to shift our attention, our resources over to the team members. So for example, we needed to make sure that we had an adequate supply of N95 masks, that we had the right goggles, the right face shields, the right gowns, that our people were being trained on all of that. Now, they get trained on that throughout the year, but, you know, when an emergency happens, everything gets ramped up pretty quickly. So pivoting from running an institution and sort of a normal environment to pivot to responding to an emergency and immediately making sure that our team members had what they need, where they needed it, and when they needed it, was critically important to us. So I wouldn't call it a difficult decision, because it wasn't, because again, like I said, the safety of our team is our number one priority. And that's both nurses, technologists, food and nutrition, environmental services, our physicians. But it was just difficult. You know, it's just a lot to take an organization like ours, which is almost $2 billion in net revenue, over 1,000-bed institution. We've got 50 outpatient locations that dot the landscape that we cover, pivoting away from normal operations and programs and services people are building and implementing on. And then moving that was just, it took a lot of focus and a lot of energy, but we were able to do that. I'd say the second sort of difficult decision, and this is, people might be surprised by this, is when we had to make the decision to limit visitors in the hospital. That really was tough because, you know, hospitals are scary places to go to, particularly if you're not well, if you're going for a procedure, if you have a major surgery. They're scary. It's anxiety provoking. And when we restricted our visitor policy to basically letting no one in, I mean, we let, you know, in an emergency, family can come in, you know, like an accident, trauma, end of life, somebody who's giving birth, they can have their spouse or partner with them. But beyond that, we basically shut down all visitation. That was hard because it put a lot of strain on our patients and it upset families. Now, I will say, to the credit of our service department and a woman by the name of Laura Click, we implemented all sorts of programs and systems to help mitigate that feeling. And like a lot of institutions, you know, we leverage technology. So using FaceTime to communicate with people, giving them, you know, we had, you know, tablets that we handed patients that they could use to interact with their families. That really did help. And Laura's department really spent a lot of time with the families and the patients to make sure they were getting the support they needed, even though it was through technology when their loved ones couldn't be with them. That was hard. It really did tug on your heart because, you know, we didn't want to do this, but in order to keep our team members safe, our patients safe, we had to limit who could come into the hospital as we get through this pandemic.
I see. And how do you see your priorities changing over the next 12 to 18 months?
That's a great question. So I don't think that COVID-19 is going away anytime soon. I think it will wax and wane, and there'll be seasonality to it, just like there is with the flu or the cold. I do believe in that. Everything I've read, our epidemiologists, our infectious disease docs, our scientists, I think this will be with us, short of a vaccine or a therapy that would essentially keep people from not dying from this, but basically managing it. Short of a very effective therapy or a vaccine, this is going to be with us for the next year or two. So we are preparing for the long haul. And so we have the ability in our institution right now, we have a surge capacity plan that can flex up to about 160 patients that we could care for on vents in a negative pressure environment. We can flex up to that at our institution. What we're probably going to do is we're going to be building, or not probably, but we're planning on building a long-term infectious disease wing / hospital / unit, however you want to describe it, so we can basically clear the institution out of COVID-19 patients and, quite frankly, any infectious disease patient, and basically have them in one location that we can manage them, both from an ambulatory perspective and an inpatient perspective, and really have a team of doctors that have a real interest in infectious disease, staff it, lead it. And I think this is going to be something that's going to be a long-term fix for us. And I think has long-term positive implications on infectious disease in general. because I do think more has to be, more time has to be spent on understanding not just the novel coronavirus 19, but other things that are going to be coming our way. I mean, this coronavirus, COVID-19, has rocked the country, the world to its core, has virtually stopped economies from functioning temporarily. It's a big deal. I think we need to think long, we at TGH are thinking long term about this, that this is the start of potentially other viruses, but our focus obviously is on COVID-19, and we're going to have a permanent unit, a permanent wing, and we're actually probably going to build a service line around infectious disease. So this is something that we think about, we build towards, we organize around on a 12-month basis. Like, this is, we're going to treat this like a real service line for our community. And so we'll have basically a state of readiness for infectious disease, these types of pandemics or issues or epidemics, 12 months a year, 24/7. I mean, that's I think where we're pivoting towards. Does that answer your question?
Yes, that's great insight and, you know, perfect knowledge in order to understand how you're really thinking about these types of things long term. I think the next thing I was wondering about is any advice that you have for other executives right now who are, you know, leading hospitals and health systems that are just beginning to start experiencing the things that you've experienced over the past few weeks. What advice do you have for them to lead their teams during the pandemic?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, because it's a balance between having complete visibility at your health system or your hospital with managing the continuity of leadership, because you need your leaders to pick up the pieces and keep moving forward after COVID-19, right? So there's continuity of the leadership chain of command along with being visible. So these are just a couple of ticks around bullet points around what I think CEOs should do. And these are things I've done. And look, there's a lot of right ways to approach leading your team. So I'm just kind of giving people a way, but I recognize and appreciate there's a lot of different styles and different ways to do this effectively. But here's what we did as a leadership team, and I'll talk to you briefly about what I did specifically as the CEO. Visibility is the most important thing early on in any emergency, whether it's a pandemic, an epidemic, a hurricane. Leadership visibility allows your team to see you. They know you're in control. They know you're in command, and they know that you're walking shoulder to shoulder with them through the crisis. So being very visible early on and throughout the whole pandemic, in this case, pandemic, is very important. You cannot retreat and not be seen. You've got to be. Now, this is a little tricky, because you balance that against leadership continuity and leaders leading the organization into the future. So you've got to balance that with also the social distancing and staying away, because critical leaders to the organization really can't get sick, because the long-term implications for that are huge. And they're obvious, right? I mean, you got an effective leader or leaders doing really good strategic work and growing and expanding that organization. They're going to need you post COVID-19. But God forbid you get sick, really ill, and incapacitated for an extended period of time. That can hurt the institution. So you got to balance it. But visibility is critically important. The other thing that I did is I communicate directly with the staff. And we've got, if you include our team members and our entire medical staff, we're about 10,000 people, or close to 10,000 people. I communicate with them via email. I do YouTube internal video chats and messages with them. It's not just me. Like, the last couple of messages I sent, it was me and my chief medical officer talking about our preparedness, our state of readiness. So we did that. Through the video chats. The emails I talked to you about, I mean, that emailing is really effective. The other thing that I did is I made sure that there was one place that communication came from. And so nothing internally or externally leaves Tampa General Hospital without my chief strategy and communications officer, Stacy Brandt, and I looking at it. Nothing. And it all comes out from my office. Because in an emergency, you can't have, in my opinion, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 different people, given the size of your institution, communicating at the team internally or even externally. It gets confusing to people because they're like, well, who do we listen to? Where's the message coming from? So we immediately control that. And that's part of our process. Around messaging, complete transparency. That's the next bullet point. Tell it like it is. Don't hold back. You have to be completely transparent with your team. You have to hear them. You have to listen to them. You have to respond to them in a very transparent, candid way. They deserve it. They have a right complete transparency and being candid. So that is something we work very hard on. You don't want to candy coat things. We're not causing hysteria, but we're very direct with our team. We're very transparent with our team. They ask a direct question, we give them a direct answer. And that's both internally and externally. That includes the media. The other thing that I do is twice a week I communicate with my board of directors. On Mondays and Thursdays, we send out a board report. And that board report is an update. It's a situational analysis. We don't get into the gory details of what's happening, but we give them all of the themes, all of the activities that are happening over those few days. So they know that on Monday and Thursday, they're going to get a email from me through a secure portal that they can access and they can read and they can know exactly what's going on at the institution and the health system. That is really important. The other thing that we do is we communicate with our medical staff through our chief of staff, and he does a great job. He does a great job. Dr. Padra does an absolutely outstanding job. He'll build messaging, send it to Stacy, my strategy and communications officer. We'll go through it, approve it, tweak it up a little bit. He'll take it, review it, and then send it to the medical staff. He does that on a very consistent basis. And then finally, what I would tell people to do, only communicate when you have something to say. There is such a thing as over-communicating in a crisis and then communication fatigue. If your team members, if your physicians, if your board, if the outside in the community get too much information, they could stop listening to it or not read it. So we are always asking ourselves through this whole thing, day by day, do we have something to communicate today? If we don't, then there's no reason to communicate. If we do, then we need to communicate. So some days we'll communicate 2 or 3 times to our team. Because a lot of this, it's a very fluid situation. So we want our team to have real-time information as quickly as we get it. That's very rare that we would communicate to the organization 2 or 3 times in a day, but it has happened through this for the last 6 weeks. But we only communicate when we have something to say. And then there'll be sometimes, there'll be a day or two, we don't go past probably 2 days, where we're not communicating at all because we have the team completely briefed up. They know exactly what's going on. So we spend a lot of time thinking that through. We really have something to communicate. And if we do, we do, and we communicate. And if we don't, we'll hold back and we'll communicate the following day. That's been the unsolicited feedback we're getting from the team in general has been very good. They feel like they're well communicated, that we're engaged, that we're visible, that we're connected, that we're feeding them information that they need and that they want. And that's basically how we're doing it right now. So the other thing we spend a lot of time on is you don't want to knee jerk. You don't want to overreact. You don't want to over course correct in this situation. You want to stay focused. You want to be calm. You want to be thoughtful. And you want to work your plan and work the problem. don't allow the problem to work you. And that can happen in an emergency. I mean, that can happen in a crisis. We spend a lot of time as a team. This is a huge team effort. There's no one individual in any organization that can handle this. These are teams and teams of people. But the teams have leaders, and the leaders need to stay focused, need to stay calm, and be very thoughtful about what they're doing. Because we're going to get through this, and we're going to be better for it and stronger for it. We got a couple of tough more weeks ahead of us, but we're going to get through this.
That's a great inside look into how you've been leading your teams at Tampa General, and I really appreciate your thoughts on that. Real quick here before we wrap up, I was wondering if you could give a quick message to the frontline workers at Tampa General. What would that be at this time?
I am absolutely humbled by my team's response to this. From the leadership team immediately mobilizing our emergency operations center to getting in, getting organized into dealing with the crisis that's happening moment by moment, hour by hour, day by day, the teams of people thinking about what the future looks like 2 months from now, 3 months from now, looking at the financial implications, teams of people getting organized around how we're going to continue to support our team members through adjustments in salaries and benefits and different compensation models and programs. I mean, completely humbled by the leadership team's response to this. And it's like automatic. I mean, they just have done a great job. My chief operating officer, Kelly Cullen, world class. Our chief medical officer, Sally Houston, great work. Our chief financial officer, Mark Runyon, all over this. I mean, the team, Stacey Brand, our strategy and communications officer, everybody just really, really focused. The humbling part is to the men and women that are on the front lines. And this is what matters most to me. And I know I speak for my entire senior leadership team. The men and women that are on the front lines caring for these patients or supporting the departments and the people that are caring for these patients are absolutely heroes in my mind. They are sacrificing their own health and wellness for men and women in our community. I mean, imagine this, and we all go through it. I go through it to an extent. You go to the hospital every day, you're doing what you've been trained to do, and then you have to come home and worry about contracting the illness and giving it to your family. I mean, think about the load that somebody feels when they come home and they have to think about that. If you look at my team, if you look at the men and women who are on the front lines, the nurses, the doctors, the techs, the respiratory therapists, the environmental services people, the food and nutrition people, facilities, our facilities group, everybody mobilizing to respond, completely humbled. I have never seen a team operate like this. These are heroes. These people are absolute warriors. No one has said, I'm not taking care of these patients. Nobody is backing away from what's in front of us. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, if you think about it, it's a very emotional. I mean, these people are putting in their health and wellness on the line every single day. They are absolute warriors in my mind. And I couldn't be prouder of them on how they're performing, how they're supporting each other. Because one of the things we talk a lot about at Tampa General, and this may not get talked a lot about across the industry, it should, but it may not to the degree that I think it should anyway, is the idea of extending kindness, the idea of extending love and empathy, the idea of showing vulnerability. Because when you show vulnerability, you actually show strength. And when you can be kind and empathetic, and you can show love, and you can show vulnerability, it is amazing how a team comes together and support each other. And if there's any time in our history, in our industry, in healthcare to do that, it is right now. And what I'm really proud about with my team is they are showing kindness and love and empathy. They are showing vulnerability and coming together as teams to support one another. That is incredible. and I am extremely proud of them. And that's, I just tell my team, keep doing what you're doing because you are world-class people.
That's really inspiring, John. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. And please stay tuned for future episodes of Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Take care.